Now that's one problem, is parallax and calculating the distance that stars are away. It's a guess, basically. It's close to a guess, anyway. And then, depends on your mathematician. And the other thing that's involved is the rate of, how fast light travels. Now, there are two different ideas, major ideas. There are lots of other ideas. Two different major ideas as to the speed of light. And then one is in Euclidean space. I-D-E-A-N? Euclidean space, which says that light travels in straight lines. And Riemannian space. Which says that light travels on curved surfaces, or in curved directions, or, yeah, well, surfaces they wouldn't say, but that's the word that's used, but they don't mean surface, really. It travels in curved lines, we'll say that. It's easier to understand that way. It's easier. I'm not saying it's easy to understand the idea of Riemannian space. I had a guy describe Riemannian space to me one time and exactly what it's like, and I just sat there and my poor little brain started blowing fuses, and I said, "I'm going to go through that again, please." But the idea, you see, in Euclidean space, the idea is that light travels in a straight line. In Riemannian space, the idea is that the universe, in many of its, in many places, especially in deep space, light does not travel in straight lines, but curves. And so what happens then is in Euclidean space, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. In Riemannian space, the shortest distance between two points is a curved line. And a straight line is longer. The distance is actually longer. Now, as I said, you try to get that. You have somebody explain that to you sometime. I don't know if I've still quite got it, the way he described the thing. Okay, but actually, there have been experiments done with that you can show physically what that's like with ball bearings and specially shaped table and things like that. You can show that the curved distance is actually the shorter distance than the straight distance. Okay, have you ever seen? Sometimes it looks like the only thing I can really relate it to is sometimes on a map you see a distance and it's curved like this, but really the distance on the surface of the Earth, that's shorter. But it's because you've projected it into two dimensions rather than three that you get the curved distance is really the shorter distance. So what happens is there's a formula that you can use using the Riemannian idea of space that ends up saying that the only I don't want to say that the word only shouldn't be used, that the longest distance, no, the distance is infinite, the longest time that something can travel, even if it's an infinite distance, the longest time that it can travel is 15.71 years. Now, at about five light years, Riemannian, Euclidean, up to about five light years, they're about the same. But then when you get past that, there's a dramatic change because of the formula, and you can only go to 15.71 years, and that's an infinite distance. No matter how far light would travel, it would only take 15.71 years to get that, to travel that infinite distance, no matter how far it is. Huh? That's traveling time. Yeah. The traveling time would be 15.71 years to get from one place to the other, no matter how far it is. Okay, so with different theories like that, of course, another idea altogether that you might want to investigate is the idea that the rate of the speed of light has changed. Some people believe that the rate of the speed of light was instantaneous before the fall, and at the fall, with the destruction and corruption of the Earth and the universe, that the speed of light was dramatically slowed by the entrance of sin into the universe, the corruption or the curse that was brought upon the universe. So there are people I try to stay away from that kind of thing because it's too biblical, you know. When you're talking with people out in the street, they go, "The what? The fall? What are you talking about?" They have no idea what you're talking about. And they have no idea that the earth is not in the state that God originally created it to be in. They think that it's always been like this. It's always been bad like this. Okay, so is God involved in deception? No. Because in order to make something as a natural process, you have to make it in the middle if it's going to continue. So he's not involved in deception by making something that is continuing. He had to do it that way or it couldn't continue. Now, what about the fossils and strata then? What about all these strata in the earth that look as if they've been laid down over many millions of years? What about those? Well, we have to talk about fossils. How are fossils formed? How are fossils formed? It's finally become warm enough to take off my jacket. It's the first time I've taught without my jacket. How were fossils formed? Would they form in a uniformitarian way or in a catastrophic fashion? Well, we've already discussed that a little bit, but when we look at the fossils in the earth, we see that the preponderance of evidence is they could not have happened in a uniformitarian fashion. When you see fossilized trees that stretch through whole, three, four, five strata like this, and you've got this fossilized tree that goes through the whole thing. Question is, how did that get there? See? And it has no evidence whatsoever that it was pushed through or anything like that. It appears as if the strata were laid around the tree. And yet the problem with that is, was the tree growing there? If it was growing there and the bottom area was covered, how did the rest of the tree manage to go on for a few million years without decaying? If the, as the rest of these strata were being laid down. And yet you find things like that all the time. You find whole forests of fossilized trees through strata. Things like that. Incredible inconsistencies with the idea of evolution. So how are they formed? Well, they're formed by a catastrophe of some sort. Something has to happen suddenly, and there has to be a lot of energy involved to do that. You know that oil is now being produced, can be produced in a laboratory? All you have to have is enough energy to put into the materials and you can produce oil. And you don't have to have millions of years, produce it right away. Okay, well, for instance, here's an interesting little bit of information. There were some power lines that went down, broke and hit the ground just south of Grand Prairie, Alberta, Canada. And these power lines, before they could get the electricity turned off, for about 2 hours, the electricity was going into the ground. There were shrubs in the area, the ground shrub, and the bushes on the top of the ground that were in contact with oxygen were burnt. They were charcoaled. But the roots underground that were not in contact with oxygen, but had all this electricity going through them, guess what they did? They fossilized. They were petrified, complete mineral exchange. They were petrified in 2 hours, from living material to petrified material in 2 hours. And a guy that had a piece of it took it to a geologist and took it and wrapped it on the table and they said, how do things get petrified like this? And the guy said, oh, probably by water seepage. He said, how long do you think it would take for that to happen? And the guy says, oh, thousands, if not maybe a million years of water seepage. And went through the whole thing. And he said, would you believe 2 hours through electricity? And so they discussed it for a while. And the scientist would not even accept that that was true. He said, you must be lying to me. Okay. So dedicated to his theory that he couldn't even look at the facts. Okay, so, what's that? Yes, right. Don't bother me with the facts, my mind's already made up. Okay, so what would we expect to find in these, in the strata if evolution were true? What would we expect to find? Well, we expect to find multitudes of intermediate forms of animals changing from one thing to the next. A lot of animals that were exactly like one another. We would expect to find that, but we don't. What we find is highly complex forms arising suddenly with no antecedents in the different strata. And what would that indicate? Well, it doesn't indicate evolution. It doesn't indicate evolution. I'm not saying that it automatically indicates creation either, because I don't think we should say that. But it may indicate something about an event that took place in the past. And I think it can all be explained without saying that it was laid down over a long period of time. We'll talk about that when we talk about the flood. So then, the geologic column, by the way, that they so neatly place in your history, or not history, your science books, that geologic column is found in its entirety nowhere on the earth. Nowhere. There are quote, little parts of it that are found in lots of different places. And then what have the men done? They have put them together in a particular, these parts in a particular order according to the preconceived idea of evolution. That things go from a lower form to a higher form. They put the things together and you get these nice neat little columns in your science books, but they're, it's found nowhere in the earth in its entirety. Okay? And so how did they put them together? This layer over that layer? That this one's older than that one? According to the preconceived idea of evolution. You get the idea? And so they made the column according to evolution rather than finding it someplace and then saying, this is the evidence. Now, what is this trying to indicate? What does this evidence indicate? And so it's entirely based on evolutionary theory. I was in Amsterdam talking with a guy on the Dam Square, which is a major square in the city up from the train station. And it was... I get so envious sometimes of these people that can discuss things like, this guy could discuss evolution in 7 different languages. And I thought, But anyway, here we were discussing evolution in English. And he had all these terms down in English too. He could do it in Russian, he could do it in Italian, Dutch, German, French, English. And as we were talking, I said, well, What about the strata in the earth? What would we expect to find if evolution were true? And he said, multitudes of intermediate forms, this thing just about like that thing, only a little bit different. I said, do we find that? And he said, no, it's not what you find at all. This guy wasn't a Christian. I said, what do you find? He said, just highly complex forms suddenly appearing in the strata and no antecedent whatsoever. They're just there. And I said, oh, well, then what about all these missing things? And he said, well, sometimes scientists like to say that the strata that were laid down at one point, and there may have been a few million years that went on before the next one was laid down. So you get sort of snapshots of history rather than a continuation. You get these little snapshots as the strata were laid down at different times. I said, oh, okay. And so where then are all these intermediate forms supposed to be? And he said, well, they're actually in between the strata. You know, in the spaces in between, because they weren't recorded for us because we didn't have anything laying down those fossils at that time. And so that's interesting. What is science based on? And he said, observable phenomena. And I said, what is that based on? And he said, non-existent phenomena. And I said, well, what would you call that then? Would you call it science? He said, oh, no. He said, I would call it philosophy. And I said, have you made up your mind yet about whether or not you believe in evolution? He said, nope. He said, I have a tendency to think that it's not true. But, he said, I haven't made up my mind yet. I said, what would you call these people? He said, philosophers. He said, you wouldn't call them scientists because they're not working with observable phenomena. What was that? Yeah. See, because if you're working on the basis of evidence that somewhere, that was lost somewhere in there, and you're only presupposing the evidence, you're not a scientist, you're a philosopher. And we could speculate anything about what happened in there. My goodness. Okay, so then what about dinosaurs? Dinosaurs? Did dinosaurs live at the same time that men lived? Sure did. Dinosaurs lived at the same time that men did, and they were destroyed how? With the flood. And couldn't live too long afterwards, those that were in the water, couldn't live, see it says everything that was on the land and had breath died. It doesn't say the things that were in the water died. And so there may have been some things that existed in the water that lived, but they couldn't have lived too long after that. And what about myths like dragons and sea monsters, that these things that we call myths, some of which are mentioned in the Bible, like the breath of Leviathan kindles coals of fire. What about that? You ever heard about the bombardier beetle? There is a beetle alive today. They're running around, folks. I don't know if I ever want to meet one. There is a beetle that has 2 chambers in its body that produce gases. And when you attack the beetle, raises up its rear end, shoots these gases out into the air, and on contact with each other and with oxygen, it forms a flame. Like that. To frighten or to harm anything that would try to attack it. Now, it's also interesting that skulls of dinosaurs have been found that have two extra chambers in the skull that could have been connected by passageways to the nose or to the mouth. Now, they don't know, it's separate chambers from the actual chamber that the brain would have been in. And so what were those chambers for? Okay. And so the idea of dragons is not as far-fetched as we would like to think, because we have animals that shoot fire today. Quickly, because of the... Yeah, you would expect that if evolution were true, that you would never find, unless something had been turned upside down by a catastrophe, you would never find things, especially things like dinosaur bones and human bones, modern human bones, in the same stratum, but you do find them. And the question is, how did those things get mixed together? See? And there is no explanation for that, but you won't hear about that when you study it in science class. You won't hear about that. They don't put that evidence in there because it does not fit. Just like you don't hear the cave paintings that were found in France that look like, you know, the mammoths and things like that. People, stick figures chasing mammoths and that kind of stuff. There are other caves with cave paintings with the same kind of material painted on the walls that show people in two-piece suits, berets, women carrying purses, and watching something, the woman sitting on a chair looking at something as if she may be looking at something like a television. Now, why don't you hear about those caves? Why don't you hear about those paintings? You know why? This is the official statement. Because it will confuse and harm some people's minds. Now, why will it confuse and harm some people's minds? Because it's going to disturb their idea of evolution. That's why. Perfectly fits, though, with what I believe, and that is that man, as the farther back you go, the more sophisticated and the more educated man was. The more intelligent he was. So it doesn't bother me. We'll talk about cavemen later. Where did cavemen come from? Where do cavemen come from? They come from catastrophes. Okay, so what about dinosaurs? They lived with men. How were they killed? At the flood. Why didn't Noah take some on the ark? We don't know if he did or not. He may have taken a couple of eggs or something with him on the ark. Yeah, no. He may have taken some with him, but it would have been useless because the dinosaurs could not have lived afterwards anyway. The large reptilian bodies couldn't exist after the flood took place, and we'll talk about that. Let's talk about the early earth and the flood, shall we? And the things that happened at the flood that changed the earth dramatically. Because we still suffer the consequences of the flood. Every day we suffer right now you are suffering the consequences of the flood. Because the things that are coming, the rays from the sun that are coming through the windows would not have been coming, many of those at the time before the flood, because we were protected from them. The early earth, it says in Genesis chapter 1, God separated the waters which were above the earth from the waters which were below the earth. And in between, he calls it the expanse. I'm not going to give you all the references. You can look it up yourself. The expanse in between was called the place where the birds fly. In other words, our atmosphere. And the waters below the expanse, he called, gathered into one place and called seas. But there were these waters which were above the expanse. There was water above the expanse, which means that the earth, either with actual water or with very heavy vapor, was clouded or completely covered, encapsulated with water above the atmosphere, which meant that the whole thing was like a big terrarium. And most geologists will tell you that the earth at one time was much warmer than it is now. And there was tropical vegetation growing in places that now, like the North Pole, South Pole, found tropical vegetation. Another interesting thing they found is before the flood, some penguins were 6 feet tall. Can you imagine taking your 6-foot penguin for a walk? Everything was bigger and better before the flood. They say things are improving, but things were bigger and better before the flood. You find cockroaches were 1 foot long. Told you we'd get to the cockroaches. I don't know if I could call that better, but they were bigger. I mean, you could practically strap one to each foot and let them carry you around. And dragonflies. Can you imagine this, going along on your motorcycle and getting hit by a dragonfly with a 6-foot wingspan? 6-foot wingspan on the dragonfly's hook. Ants, 6 and 8 inches long. Yeah. Actually, the ark, according to its dimensions, had room to spare from the way that was done. Anyway, we won't go into that. You can study all that kind of stuff. There was plenty of room in the ark. Now, the waters which were above the expanse at the time of the flood. See, now, what would this do? Let's name some of the things that this would do. First of all, it protects the earth from many different things from space. Another thing that it does is it produces a greater atmospheric pressure. Anywhere from 5 to 10 times as great as it is now. You say, could we live in that? Yes, and as a matter of fact, we'd live even better in it than we do now. In an atmosphere that was that heavy. You know these diving bells that people go down in the water? Sometimes the atmospheres have to be taken up quite a bit in there. I mean, they have to go higher. And between five and seven atmospheres, if you cut your hand, which happened, a guy cut his hand, had a deep gash in his hand while he was down in the diving bell. He had to stay down for the experiments that they were doing. Okay? Cut his hand, had a deep gash, 24 hours, and it was completely healed. In 24 hours. And they still don't know exactly what the process is as to why people heal much more quickly in that kind of atmospheric pressure, but they do. And it's actually being used in some hospitals for speeding up healing, putting people under pressure. Okay? Not psychological, but physical pressure. Okay? some of the nurses feel they're under pressure. Yeah, DTS is pressure, but I guess it produces healing, but if you submit to it. And another thing that's really interesting is with this atmospheric pressure, we can explain the flight of the pterodactyls. Because they could not fly as the atmosphere is now. They couldn't get off the ground. There is not a heavy enough atmosphere to get off the ground for a pterodactyl, given their wing structure, and if it was really covered with skin, rather than with like feathers we have on birds, if it was covered with skin, they're too heavy to be able to make it off the ground or to fly in the atmosphere that we have now. But given 5 or 10 atmospheres more, they could have flown. There are other things. Is it protects us, gives atmospheric pressure. It would have made everything warm. And it would have been like a terrarium. In that, there's no circulatory system inside a terrarium of water. Evaporating, raining, running, evaporating, raining, running. There is a mist. If you've ever had a terrarium, and you realize that there's a mist on your terrarium in the morning, clears up during the day, and then there's a mist in the evening. And it says in the Bible that a mist used to go up from the surface of the ground and water the whole earth. And there was no rain. There was no rain before the flood. Right? Everything was watered either by springs and rivers. Springs that came out of the ground, and let's see, there could have been rivers. Doesn't mean that there weren't rivers, but there were. There wasn't the circulatory system we have now with the, like snow. Snow is a result of the flood. It's a result of the sin of man. Okay, and so you had a terrarium type environment, and interesting things would have happened in there. I'm going to have to go on because I've got to finish with this, but. So then, how did the flood occur? How did the flood occur? Well, it says that God, it says it rained 40 days and 40 nights, but it also says that God opened the windows of heaven and poured down water on the earth. And where did all this water come from? Came from the atmosphere. Okay? It either condensed and came down, or it was poured down in some other fashion if it was liquid. Do you need to change? Okay. And so when this came down on the earth, by the way, the seas originally were much shallower than a shallow sea. Because the way the sea life is described in Genesis, it says the waters were teeming with creatures. The waters don't teem with creatures in deep oceans. They teem with creatures on shelves, on the continental shelves. But they do not teem with creatures in the deep oceans. Okay, the percentage of animal life there to water is much, much less. But where there's a lot of light coming into the water because the water is not so deep, then you get a teeming of creatures. And the Bible says the oceans were teeming with creatures. So evidently the oceans were shallower at one point, and the mountains were. And so on the early earth, you've got shallow oceans that were teeming with life, and you've got lower mountains. Now when this water was brought down onto the earth, in Psalm 104, it says concerning the flood, interesting verses concerning the flood in there, that God sat as king at the flood. And it says, the valleys sank down, and the mountains rose up. In other words, the variation on the earth became much more stark than it was before. It said, that the waters may go to the place that you had prepared for them. So where did all this water go on the earth? See, people have a question with, if all this water was there and it actually covered the mountains, which could have been shallower at that time, if it covered the mountains, then where did all this water go? Well, the mountains weren't as tall then as they are now, because it says the mountains rose up and the valleys sank down that the water might have a place to go. Psalm 104. And so we miss that sometimes because we're trying to read a little too poetically, but that's actually what happened. See, there is no viable theory that is accepted by everybody concerning mountain building in geology. You don't understand mountain building in geology, but the Bible says that it happens through a great flood. That the whole contour of the earth was changed because of this tremendous pressure due to the water that was brought upon the earth to destroy man because of his sin. And so that's how the flood took place. The water was poured down on the earth, and then the earth changed shape in order that the water could be accommodated. And so how were the strata and the fossils formed? When the earth was destroyed by the flood, all this material was suspended in liquid. And then as it settled over the period of the year, was settling out, the Bible says that when the water left the earth, it left, the Hebrew word says, coming and going from the earth. It came, and then it went back. And then it came, and then it went back. And so it was like huge tides, probably much more dramatic than we have anywhere on the earth today. But these huge tides, laden with all kinds of material, and including animal bodies, plants, a number of other things, because a lot of things died. There's one thing a fossil tells you is that something died. Okay? You know why that's important? Okay? You ever heard people try to fit a gap in between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2? And they say in there's this big gap, and that's where all the fossils were formed. And there was this early earth that was destroyed. And ever heard anything like that? Yeah? Okay, no, some of you haven't. But some people try to fit that in there, and what they're trying to do is accommodate the Bible to evolution. And they say all of these strata could have been made during that time in there where there was an earlier earth, and it was destroyed, and the earth that we have now is a different earth. You know, sort of been made over again. And what they're doing, though, they've got a problem. What is the one thing a fossil tells you? Something died. And what does the Bible say about when death entered the world? When Adam sinned. Okay? And so if you fit it in here, between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2, you have to deny the verses in the book of Romans that say that death entered the world through sin. Through Adam. Through one man. And so either it entered through Adam, or it entered some other time. So you can't fit all of that death in there, because nothing died, not in the realm of Nephesh before Adam sinned. Okay? Things had to die on a cellular level in order for animals to eat plants. Okay? But no Nephesh died, no creatures, a man and animals. They were not intended to. Okay, let's go on. And so you've got all this pressure and all this heat that is happening at the flood. It says the fountains of the great deep were broken up. That could have been water was coming out of the earth. It could have been superheated water. Also could have been lava that was coming out of the earth. The fountains of the great deep were broken up. I mean, the catastrophe that happened at that time is of such a magnitude that it would make make Krakatoa look like a firecracker. Yeah? The things that were going on at that time that were happening all over the entire earth. Now, the principles of hydrodynamics, that is, how things act when they're in water, when they're suspended in water, and how water acts itself, can explain the general order of fossils in the strata and also the mixture that we find. See, evolution will not explain the mixture, the inverted strata, things turned upside down. It won't explain all that. But a flood will, and the principles of hydrodynamics, because it's like this. You've got a lot of things floating in water, and as things settle, you take a tube and fill it with water with things in it. Different things that have different densities and different sphericity, and the ratio between the density and the sphericity of the object will determine where it will settle in a particular amount of water with a particular kind of silt. You know, a particular medium like mud or sand or whatever. Okay? That, and if you take, I've seen this before, with a 14, you take a 14 foot, sort of hard to manage, but, tube, and take that, shake it up, and let it stand, and the things come out in layers. And then take it, shake it up again, and then let it stand, and the things come out in exactly the same layers. See? There is a certain physical principle that determines whether something will come out at the bottom or something will come out at the top. The smaller, denser, more spherically shaped objects will come out at the bottom. And the things that have more drag and are lighter in relationship to water are going to come out at the top. And so you will find a general order coming out in any material that has things suspended in it. You'll find a general order due to the principles of hydrodynamics and fluidics. Love to go into fluidics, but I don't know that I can take the time to go into all the mathematics that is involved in fluidics. Okay? So with this idea in mind, if you remember the flood, taking all these things and putting them into suspension in water, they would settle out in a particular order. And not only that, but you also get mixture because you've got the tides taking place and things could be mixed together. And also inversion because there may be certain things around at one time in one place that were around earlier at another place. You get the idea? It depends on what was in the particular tide that was taking place as the different strata were being laid down. And then with the pressure of the water, and a tide is a little bit later as it was going off the earth, but with the pressure of the water, particularly on the lower levels, which would be mostly aquatic things, small aquatic things that would have been laid down, with that pressure on top of that, could very easily have hardened those layers into the position that they were. Looking as if they'd been laid down over a long period of time, but really, it was a very short period. And then you also get the things like the Z-strata, Z-shaped strata, where you get layers that were laid down but were still soft, and then due to the movements of the earth, the mountains rising up, the valleys sinking down, that things could be bent like that and then hardened into those shapes. And so things turned upside down or mixed up together, we wouldn't have any trouble with that. So where did the water go? I already told you that, Psalm 104. Now, see what I want to do here. Let's talk a little bit about life in a test tube. Wait a second, before we do that, let's talk a couple of things about what happened after the flood. Once this water layer was gone, the atmospheric pressure would have changed, and then large reptilian bodies would have had trouble existing for a couple of reasons. First of all, problems with the oxygen, being able to reach the larger parts of their bodies as cold-blooded animals. They take their temperature from the environment around them. The temperature was going to be colder in places also. I'm just spitting out things here. You just have to sort of write them down and think about them. Also, the vegetation that they would have lived on, many of them would have been vegetarian. Actually, they would have all been vegetarian. Many of them, well, no, they wouldn't have had to be. Because after the fall, they could have been meat-eating after the fall. Everything was vegetarian before the fall. But after the fall, there were some things that were not vegetarian anyway. And animals could have started before man did. Man was vegetarian until the flood. At least Noah was. Okay? And so the earth then, not being protected from the rays from space, the vegetation would no longer produce everything that was necessary as far as vitamins and protein was concerned for man. And so God said to Noah, Now I give you all the animals of the field. To you they shall be for food. But man didn't eat animals before that time because he could get everything he needed from the plant. Whereas after the flood, the earth is in such a state now that we can't get everything that we need from the plants, and God has given us animals to eat because we need it. So it's also a temporary measure because there probably weren't a whole lot of plants around that hadn't been damaged in some way by the water, so there wasn't much to eat. Okay? Noah had to live on something, and that's why he had 14 of some animals and only two of others. You realize that? He didn't take two of each kind. He took two of every kind except the clean animals, and of those he took them by their pairs in sevens, which means there were 14 of those. And how is he going to offer a sacrifice of sheep to God after the, can you imagine that? He just eliminated the only sheep that would ever be around by offering a sacrifice to God. But there were 14 sheep, so he had a few to work with. Okay? Probably a couple to eat too. And then it's no longer uniformly warm. And then man, not being protected from the rays from space, his lifespan, both because of the loss of atmosphere, the meaning that he would be much more susceptible to sickness and would not heal as quickly, would have his lifespan shortened because of the effect of harmful rain and because he didn't heal as well afterwards. And you see a dramatic decrease. 900 years, 600 years, 500 years, and so on. 300 years, 200 years, and goes down to about, levels off at about 100 years. Dramatic decrease in the age of man after the flood, almost instantaneously after the flood. Within two or three generations, it's down to 100 years. Here's an interesting thought for you. In Galatians 3, verse 8, it says that the Scripture prophesied to Abraham. The Scripture prophesied to Abraham. It doesn't say it prophesied about him. It says the Scripture prophesied to Abraham. Now, the Scripture that we have now, the first portions of it were at least, if the book of Job was written that far back, the first portions of it were written during the time of the children of Israel were captive in Egypt. You can, basically, by the internal evidence, we can date the book of Job as being somewhere around in there. Which means that it was after Abraham that Job was written, and then it's much later with Moses that the, a couple hundred years at least, that the Pentateuch was written. Okay? And so what was this Scripture that prophesied to Abraham? Okay? You ever thought of this? You got Adam and his life. See, let's go here. And I believe it is Adam's life. I'm not exactly sure. There's one other person here. Who is that? Is that Enoch? Yes, it is. Adam's life overlaps Enoch's life, which overlaps Noah's life, which overlaps Terah's life, which overlaps Abraham's life. Okay? You've only got four people back to Adam. And that's because of the great length of time that those people lived. Okay? So if you've got this overlap like this, and it says that the Scripture preached the gospel to Abraham, that remember, after Adam sinned, God promised that there would be a Messiah. He was already working on that. At the time that Adam and Eve fell, he right away said to them, there'll be the seed of the woman who will come. Okay? And so from this point, when Adam sinned, Adam himself, having language, having made up his own language, could have written down things that God told him, which could have been passed to Enoch, which could have been passed to Noah, taken through the flood, passed to Terah, and prophesied to Abraham. And that means that Moses, just a thought for you, Moses could have been working with written records that were written by Adam, the first man to be created, when he was putting together the Pentateuch. So our little rendition of the creation may be a lot more reliable than just some revelation given to Moses on a mountain. It may have been told to us and passed to us through written records from Adam himself. Okay, a little thought for you there. Okay, so then what about life in the test tube? What about life in the test tube? Will man create life in the test tube? Wouldn't bother me if he did. Okay?
Man has not gone around when he says he's made amino acids and therefore he's proved that life can happen by chance. That's not true. Man did not run around finding. I'm going to go through this quickly because I know you're tired and I'm tired and we need to get through this. He did not run around finding life happening by accident 5,000 times and record how it was happening by accident. Right? He did not observe a phenomenon like that taking place. What he did was he figured out with his mind how life was, how life was structured. He figured that out, took the proper constituents, put them together at the proper time, in the proper proportion, with the proper environment and controls on the environment, namely putting the energy in and taking the energy out, draining off the left-handed molecules and so forth, and came up with amino acids, which are the building blocks of life, right? Which, what does that indicate? Does that indicate that life happens by chance? No, it indicates that life happens through a logical process of putting certain things together in a certain fashion with a certain environment. It indicates that it takes a mind to make life. That's exactly what it indicates. And so, it does not indicate that life happened by chance, but that it takes intelligence for life to come about. And so if man were to make life a cell that reproduced itself in a test tube, I would applaud and go, thank you very much, you've just proved our point. It takes a mind to make life. Because no matter how much energy he put, actually, the more energy and intellect that he puts into it, which some of these guys are really brainy, much more than I am, the more energy and intellect that the person puts into it, the more he proves that it takes a mind to make life. Right? Like, what's his name? A.E. Wilder Smith said, he said, if I develop a chemical compound, say, an antibiotic, you know, something like that. If I develop a chemical compound, and then I lose my nose, and somebody comes along 5 years later and makes the same chemical compound and publishes his material, and I've lost my nose, he said, what does the scientist conclude from that? He said, if you're following evolution, the conclusion would be this: I don't exist. You see how illogical that is? To say that because one person figured out the same thing that another person figured out does not mean that the other person doesn't therefore no longer exist. But a lot of people are trying to say that because man has made amino acids with his mind in a test tube, figured out how God did it, that therefore God doesn't exist. And everything happened by chance. It doesn't logically follow. Okay? All it proves is that what was there already was put together by a mind. That it took that, because they didn't see it happening by chance. Okay? So, it takes a mind to make life. Now, one of the last things we're going to do here is talk about the evidence for the superiority of ancient man. We'll take some archaeological things first, and then some biblical things. Evidence for the superiority of ancient man. First, archaeological. Number one, the pyramids. Tremendous intelligence went into the pyramids. Name a few things about the pyramids that you might not have known before. Do you realize there is a layer of cement under the pyramids that is as thick as a piece of paper? Maybe I should say as thin as a piece of paper. And the stones are resting on that layer of cement on the sand. Now, exactly how did they do that? Did they put that in afterwards? Did they put the stones down on before? How did they walk on it without breaking it? We'd like to know exactly how they did that. Helicopter. Well, who knows? They probably have some understanding. Now, let me say this. We must remember that man in the past, man today, in his naturalism, is excluding the idea of the supernatural. But, in the past, men did not do that in reference to science. They did not exclude the supernatural. And so some of the things that we see that have happened that we cannot explain may be a combination of man's intelligence plus some demonic thing. You see? Because they did not exclude the supernatural from the idea of science in the past. And so they included the spiritual world as a part of reality. And so some of the things that have been done may actually have been guided by or done by demons. But there's also evidence that some of these people were very intelligent, just by themselves. The king's tomb, his mummy, not his mommy, but his mummy, okay? Was, for some of you from Canada, it's the same thing, where the king would lie in a position and there was a hole through the pyramid out to the outside such that the sun would shine on his face on his birthday. And that's the only time that it did it. During the year, the only time that it would cross his face was on his birthday. Now that takes some understanding of what's going on in the universe. Where the stars are, where the sun is, how it moves. And the question is, did they drill the hole there after the stones were put there, or were they done at the quarry where they were dug out? Now either way, it's pretty amazing. But if they did it at the quarry, yeah, I think it'd be even more amazing if they did it at the quarry before they put it together. And then the question is, how did they make those holes? Okay? Or another thing, number two, the stones of Baalbek, which I believe is right now, it's in, where is it? Is it in Lebanon now? Still in Lebanon? You can never tell what with those borders, the way the borders change over there, where anything is. People, you know, they won't even produce maps of the Middle East. Map makers won't produce maps of the Middle East because the borders change to... You can't find a present map of the Middle East because they changed them. I think it's in Lebanon, Baalbek. But there are these stones that are like 30 feet tall, 60 feet long, 30 feet wide. Oops, a little bit out of perspective here. Sorry. Anyway, got the idea. There are 30 by 30 by 60. And, you know, 30 feet by 30 feet by 60 feet. Huge thing. And they're so well put together that on five sides out of the six, that means here, 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 and then behind, five sides out of the six, you can't even get a knife blade in between. And they were evidently quarried someplace else and then placed there. And how that was done is just total enigma as far as figuring that one out. Number three, the Stonehenge. Which Stonehenge is only one structure out of a number of hundreds of structures that stretch all the way through Scandinavia, down through Northern Europe, and then across into, it's sort of a crescent like that down into England. And Stonehenge is only one example, a good one, because it's been well preserved. And some interesting things have been found out about Stonehenge. First of all, it's all lined up with the sun and moon and stars in a very intricate fashion. You can tell what time of the year it is, what day it is, and so forth, just by the stones, where they are. Another thing was how it was built. Interesting idea. But one thing that's really interesting is that there are certain portions of Stonehenge in which there is microwave that is concentrated into a certain area. And the only way that they can figure out that this microwave is produced and concentrated in a certain area is because of the configuration of the stone. And some of that was used to preserve pockets of grain that were exposed to the elements. It's wet in England. It's been exposed to the elements, but lasted through what they think may have been hundreds of years. And was preserved because of the presence of the microwave that was there. Now, well, where does that come from? They don't know how that's produced through those stones. They think that it's because of the configuration of the stone. Interesting. Number four, ideas of astronomy. There are all kinds of cultures that have had, in the past, that have had tremendous knowledge in the realm of astronomy, what's happening in the universe. Such as in Mexico and some of the pyramids there. They have... you can tell what is an exact calendar on the inside of the top of the pyramids where they made their sacrifices. In South America, they found records of not only the orbit of the Earth around the Sun that was estimated to within 2 or 3 seconds accurately. Not only did they have that recorded, but within 7 seconds, they had the orbit of Venus around the Sun. And that was when science in Europe was saying that everything went around the Earth. Okay? That everything went around the Earth. They already knew that Venus went around the Sun, and they had its orbit estimated to within 7 seconds. Number five, how about these funny little things that they were digging around Baghdad in some ruins, and they found these funny-looking little things that had two prongs sticking out of them. And they found lots of them. And they couldn't figure out what they were until somebody decided, had a smart idea, he filled it with water, and it started producing 1.5 volts of electricity. And it was a wet cell. Okay, you can go to the Baghdad Museum, see those on display, dated 1000 BC. And what do you make batteries for? To run things that run on electricity, right? You don't make them just for the fun of it. 1,000 to 3,000 years ago, batteries. A concept of electricity and the use of electricity. Number six, there were eyeglasses found in China. Precision ground eyeglasses dated 1,000 BC in a tomb. And they think that they may have had both the knowledge and the technology to have made contact lenses. That was when science was still in the West, what there was of science in the West, was still saying that light went out of the eye and lit up the world rather than coming the other direction. And they had a concept that in China had the concept of not only did light come in from outside, but they knew about refraction, things being refracted through light, changing the shape of light to be able to make eyeglasses. A lot of other things. 1000 BC on that tomb. Number seven, the cave paintings in France, which I've already told you about. Cave paintings that were found right next to the other ones that we commonly hear about, but these are closed off to the public because, quote, they will be confusing or disturbing. And that's because the people are wearing, the material is the same with which the painting has been done, but the clothes are two-piece suits with the women, berets, coiffured hair, men are wearing trousers, the woman is sitting looking at something that looks like a square thing that looks like she might be watching television, women were carrying clutch purses. Amazing. Okay, some biblical evidences for the superiority of ancient man. Number one was Adam. Adam made up his own language. He created his own language. It takes a lot of intelligence to make up your own language and then remember all your vocabulary for everything that you've named. He was also to take dominion over the earth. The entire earth. He and his wife were commanded to take dominion over the earth, all the animals and everything in the earth. He was also a gardener. How many times have you heard on television or some other thing, radio, that they talk about prostitution as the world's oldest profession? I got news for you. The world's oldest profession is gardener, and the second one is animal husbandry. Okay? And if you go a long ways down the history of the Bible before you find prostitution as any kind of a profession. Okay, so that's absolutely false. The first person was a gardener. And you realize, from what we can construct pre-flood, which is hard to do, but from what we can construct, it looks as if the garden that Adam was in could have been 200 square miles. Which means it wasn't any little plot of land that he was taking care of. So when God said, till the garden and keep it, God gave him quite a job to take care of. Right? He had 200 square miles of garden to take care of. Good thing he had a helper. Okay? Number two is Cain. Cain was involved in agriculture. Agriculture did not come along after many millions of years or half a million years or whatever. Agriculture was understood by the third person who existed. And then Abel was involved in animal husbandry. He kept flocks. Number three, there was a man who created and made all kinds of musical instruments, including organs, harps, pipes. Number four, there was a man who happened to be named Tubal-Cain who could make anything out of metal. Anything out of metal. Number five, the people had a tendency at times to talk in poetry rather than prose. And you know how hard it is to write good poetry? Anybody that's had a literature class and tried to write poetry realizes it's hard to write good poetry. I never did succeed in writing any good poetry as far as my teachers were concerned. And yet these people just sort of spoke in poetry. Guy comes home, he's killed a man. And how does he tell his two wives? In poetry. He tells his two wives that he's killed somebody. Okay? Lamech told his wives that he had killed two people, or killed a person. And he was going to be worse off than Cain. He told his wives in poetry. Number six, you read about things like this. The sin of Israel is engraved in the rock with an iron stylus with a diamond point. The idea of putting diamonds on metal in order to carve other things, we think came along with the Industrial Revolution. It certainly didn't. An iron stylus with a diamond point. Number seven, what about the building of the temple? You look at the construction of the temple, Solomon's temple, or the tabernacle in the wilderness. still, a lot of people are still trying to figure out exactly how Bezaliel pounded out the lampstand out of one piece of gold. And he pounded it out. Because the way it's described, it would be very difficult to pound out of one piece of gold. And what about cavemen? We're going to have to stop here. What about cavemen? They come about because of judgments of God. Let's describe it really quickly. If we were to have a judgment of God right now, such that the entire nation of America were judged by God, there were hot stones, as the Bible calls them in Hebrew, and cold stones falling out of heaven. There was what's called naphtha, was falling from the sky, burning, running along the ground. Everything was being burnt. And we had to run for our lives, and all of our dwellings were all eliminated, and there were only a few of us left, that little remnant that was left. Where would you live the first night? Like a cave? Probably try to find some places a little more permanent. What kinds of things would be destroyed first in a judgment? The most delicate things would be destroyed first. Those kinds of things would be destroyed first. You see? Whatever's most delicate, the higher technological things, are destroyed first. It's the metal pots and the stone pots that get left behind. What happens after two generations that people have lived after there's been this catastrophe, and you tell your children about things like a tape recorder. And they go, well, can you make one? Well, no. And you talk to them about people walking on the moon, and they go, can you do it now? No, we can't do it now. And so you tell them about these things, and that becomes, in future generations, it becomes the myth in their culture. And the myth was based on truth. You see? But because of a judgment of God, the people are then left with, they have the knowledge in their mind of people in space and walking on the moon, but they can't produce any of it. And so later it becomes, a lot of that is lost, and the actual knowledge of it is lost, and it becomes myth in the society. And so where do cavemen come from? Catastrophes. Judgments of God. The things that are left behind, the people would look, if they saw your tools that you made to gather your food and cook your food and take care of your food and just to stay alive, if somebody saw that 100 years later, they'd probably think you were a few thousand years old. You know, that your things have been left behind millions of years ago. And all it was that you may have known about people walking on the moon. See, we don't know what was going on in the heads of people who were inside their minds, people that were eating stuff over a fire in a cave. They don't know what was going on in their minds. They could have known all kinds of things. Okay, so then what's our conclusion? Conclusion is that evolution is contrary to the laws of physics. It says everything's going uphill when physics says everything's going downhill. Contrary to the laws of chemistry, could not have produced the first cell because of the equilibrium of solutions, again due to entropy. Number three, contrary to scientific process, doesn't even have anything to do with scientific process, because it's not based on observable phenomena. We cannot observe evolution taking place. And there is not enough evidence for the change of one organism to another. Little thought for you in closing. You realize that the evidence, solid evidence that people have to try to show that man came from some kind of primitive ancestor can all be put, that the evidence that can be used unequivocally to try to show that, we question it, but they can try to show that, can all be put in a human coffin with lots of room to spare. And so it's contrary to scientific process. And see, all these bones, like dinosaur bones and stuff, proves absolutely nothing as far as the development of man is concerned. It just says that there was a dinosaur there. It doesn't prove anything as far as evolution is concerned, because it's so highly complex as it is, without any antecedents. And so it doesn't prove evolution, and especially not that of man. But what can be shown, used to try to show that man has evolved, can fit inside of a coffin with lots of room to spare. Okay? And it's also contrary to good philosophy. Contrary to good philosophy, because it says that the cause is less than the effect, and you cannot get any kind of absolutes from evolution. You can't get absolutes in the area of morality, knowledge, or even being from the idea of evolution. Okay, we'll stop there.